Today in our hot seat, we got Jamie Edwards, CEO and founder of Cloudbreak Health. Hello, Jamie. Good to have you here.
Hi, Inge and Sarah. Nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. We're happy to have you here. And yeah, Jamie, are you ready for it? Shall we do this?
I'm ready. Let's jump in.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are NIMSY's Inge Boonen, VP of Consulting, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
So Jamie, in one sentence, tell us, what does your company do?
So Cloudbreak Health is a company focused on healthcare disparities and leveling the playing field for limited English proficient and deaf and hard of hearing patients. We've also expanded into new use cases on the platform, including addressing other types of healthcare disparities, such as telepsych, telestroke, and other things of that nature.
Thank you for that. And talking about you, Jamie, what's the first career that you dreamed of having as a kid?
You know, for me, I think it was always something around entertainment. You know, when I was younger, I always enjoyed music and comedy and movies. And I think the thing that was most fundamental for me is I really enjoyed how they made people feel. You know, there's that Maya Angelou quote, you know, I've learned that people will forget what you said, but people will never forget how you made them feel. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to make people feel good. And so I always enjoyed the power of music, movies, and things like that to be able to do it. So I think that was probably my dream at that point.
Wow. And that brings me perfectly to the next question, which is, when you're not working, how do you like to spend your time? And I think we are getting a hint here with your background.
Yeah. So music has always been a big part of my life. I think it's, you know, to a certain degree, the career I didn't follow, probably because I wasn't good enough. Let's be honest. You know, I probably could have been my voice singing wise or, you know, playing the guitar wise, but I really enjoy it. And so I spend a lot of time playing the guitar, but really most of my time is spent with family, and we're a pretty active family. We golf, we play volleyball, we ski, we hike together. And I have two kids and some dogs. And so it's always a busy weekend.
Sounds like it.
If you were given a chance to visit three different countries, which ones would you choose and why?
I am just a huge fan of Italy. I think there's something about just food and life and how they live it in Italy that to me really resonates. And I kind of love the history around Italy as well from, you know, Roman times, et cetera. So that would be one. I think, you know, being able to have, you know, wine country in the north and then the Amalfi coast and just all the different topography there makes that really interesting too. So second one would probably be Africa. There's a certain uniqueness of environment, again, history, the ability to go on safari and see the animals and just be in some place that is just totally different from where I live in the United States. And then finally, China. I took Mandarin when I was younger, so I've always had an appreciation for languages, even though I speak not a lick of Mandarin today, unfortunately, because I'm out of practice. But I took a trip to Hong Kong, and I was fascinated by the culture and the language, and then we went across to Macau, and I think China's just a really interesting place right now. Again, a ton of history. You can see I'm a little bit of a history buff from that perspective, but it's also rapidly evolving in terms of their society and economy. And it seems like a very exciting place to be.
What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
So for me, and this applies to life just as much as it applies to business, but someone once told me, you know, take some time to work on your business instead of in it. I think we all kind of get stuck in our daily routine and a rut. And sometimes you need to take a step back to gain perspective and like be very intentional about your strategy and try and be as thoughtful as possible. And the only way you can do that is by not worrying about the daily fires you're trying to put out, right? And really taking a step back and taking a look at things holistically. So I think that applies to life as well. We get our head down with our family. We get our head down with work. And sometimes you need to take a step back and be like, all right, who do I want to be when I grow up? Because we're all not grown up yet, right?
Exactly.
We're all still works in process. And so from that perspective, it's like, all right, what do I want to be when my work in process is finished? And I think that's just good things to think about and to gain perspective on and be mindful of.
Absolutely. That's some very good advice. So I feel like we've gotten to know you a little bit better now, Jamie. You know, you're a very active, interesting person with many different interests, as I can tell. But I feel like we haven't gotten to the tough questions yet.
Okay.
So. No, I wouldn't say so, Sarah. So take it away.
One second. Let me shake it out here and get ready for this. Okay.
Right. Starting at the beginning, what inspired you to start your company?
I've always loved the concept of entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of being able to take a thought that's in your head and make it real and then make it matter to other people and have it positively impact them. And so I've combined that with kind of this growing up in and around healthcare to start a business in healthcare. And, mm-hmm. you know, we actually had a predecessor company called the Language Access Network. And the predecessor company was founded by my partner, Andy Panos. And he started the video medical interpreting industry. He was the first person to do it in the world, first person to bring an interpreter to the point of care back in 2003. And he did that because he was traveling in Mexico and experienced a language barrier. And he was in a car accident with his family. No one knew how to, no one spoke Spanish. So interactions with the doctors were very difficult. And he came back to the United States and said, this is probably happening here all the time. And so he founded that initial company, Language Access Network. And then I got involved in 2007 when the company was distressed and about to go under. And because they had spent a lot of time, just financing wasn't available to them back then. And so I stepped in to help save the business, and we refounded the company and we reworked the strategy to focus solely on healthcare. We worked the strategy to become a subscription-based business, which was the first time that had been done in language services. Mm-hmm. And we launched a bunch of other pioneering efforts in order to address what were largely healthcare disparities across the system.
So it's quite the story behind the company. I love when it's like that as well, that you can connect to it personally. So then after these initial steps, what was your first breakthrough moment, like a moment where you realized you could make a difference and that you could make some money out of this as well?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we were in the business of doing things people said we could never do. If you were to speak to people back in the day, like bringing a language interpreter in over video, like that was unheard of at that point in time, right? No, we do in-person interpretation or we use the phone. There's no need for video. But people realized that video kind of sat at the nexus of cost, quality, and efficiency in a healthcare system. And it really helped. This is all about increasing access to care and increasing access to language services and making people empowered. So we launched the first subscription-based model, as I mentioned before, so that we could properly staff the network. You know, if you don't know the demand for your service, how do you know how many interpreters you need to have on and what languages? So we used our subscription-based model to help do that. We were the first people to bring language services into telemedicine and integrate it with a telemedicine solution. We were the first people to show ROI, which we refer to as return on interpretation, not return on investment, on language services, and show that this department that hospitals thought they had to have could actually be an engine of change. And it's really that approach that made us successful, never being afraid to break new ground, never being afraid to experiment and see what works and what doesn't. But most importantly, a lot of these advancements came from just listening to clients and working very collaboratively with them.
What was your biggest failure and what have you learned from it?
Holy smokes, Sarah, which one? Just pick one of my biggest failures? Look, we're failing every day at certain things as you experiment. It's part of the experimental process. And what we try and do is make sure that we never make the same mistake twice. Mm-hmm. But I would tell you the biggest failure that I think I faced in this business was when we pursued an acquisition. There was a major acquisition that we were looking at. We started doing what I would call planning as if, where we said, well, let's say the two businesses are together. Good strategic planning would say that we don't need two sales forces, so let's not go out and hire our own salespeople, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, as it turns out, the deal took 14 months. The deal ended up failing. And we had become distracted and we had ignored our own business while we were thinking about how to put these two businesses together. And so we ended up losing a client or two and our product didn't work the way that we had wanted it to during that point in time. And we ran into some capital constraints and it took us a good 6 to 9 months to kind of say, get the ship or the train back on the track the ship back in the canal, whatever analogy you want to use, to make sure that everyone was again rowing in the right direction. And that was a good lesson for me. I, you know, if I'm looking at an acquisition, I'm not going to plan as if. I'm focused on my business, my clients, mm-hmm. making sure that we are pushing that process forward, making sure the business is funded right, to make sure that we can continue to live our mission every day.
What was something that you would describe as a big waste of time at your company?
Big waste of time. So we always waste time on a lot of different things. That's the nature of business. And you only find out you're wasting time sometimes after the fact, right? Yeah. But I would tell you, I think a big waste of time is worrying about your competition. Mm-hmm. It's important to know what they're doing, but worrying about them, I think, isn't productive, because I think great companies don't fear your competition. You welcome it because competition makes you better. Mm-hmm. You know, instead, we should keep our heads down and execute on our plan and our mission. And if we're doing a great job doing that, the competition kind of falls to the wayside. If our product is great, if our relationships with our clients are great, if we're really helping people solve a problem, then mm-hmm. our business is going to do fine no matter what, regardless of the competition. So I think worrying about the competition is a big waste of time.
Speaking of your relationship with your clients, is there any pet peeve that you have when it comes to clients?
You know, I think when clients always start off with the price discussion, you know, that's a little bit of a pet peeve. Obviously, people want a service that is delivered at the lowest possible price, right? That's kind of table stakes. But what we mm-hmm. like to talk about is, again, ROI and this return on interpretation and how much value you're creating. Yeah. If you're only looking to reduce cost, that tends to be a downward spiral, right? Mm-hmm. Because as you're reducing cost, typically that comes with some service reduction. People stop using the service, et cetera, et cetera. It's just this downward spiral of poor experience. And I think people should be focused instead on ROI, on the value that this is creating for them, and on, at the end of the day, the experience and the problem that you're solving for that patient at the point of care, or that provider at the point of care that's trying to speak to that patient, and really just take better care of them. And that patient who just wants to be empowered in understanding their care. I mean, if you think about it, Sarah Nenge, in a hospital, it's scary enough being there when you speak the language, right? People running around, you're sitting in a bed. But when you don't speak the language, it's absolutely terrifying. And so being able to focus on that and that very tangible feeling of how that patient might feel or that provider might feel is really what we should be focused on. And if we can make that experience better, then you know, you're going to drive a return on investment. You're going to make sure that that patient is seen more quickly because you have ready access to a language interpreter. You're going to make sure that you can discharge that patient more quickly, that they understand more about their care decisions. And that is a snowball of value creation in terms of increased patient flow in the hospital, better outcomes for the patient, better quality care for the provider. And all of that stuff is what makes a hospital or one of our clients competitive. It's not the cheapest language service they can buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I was in a situation like that once myself in the hospital where I didn't speak the language, and it was terrifying. But the staff
scary times, right? Scary times.
Yeah, absolutely. Aside from profitability, what are the main, like the three main things that you spend your time on as a CEO?
I would tell you culture. Mm-hmm. Those are the three things. I think, you know, I do spend a fair amount of time also on product, making sure that the product is the, you know, from a UI UX perspective is a good experience. And I definitely spend some time on client relationships and managing those for the business. But for me, if the culture is right at Cloudbreak, a lot of the other things just fall into line naturally. If my team members, and I subscribe to a very servant-oriented style of leadership. I realize that my job as CEO is to be there for everybody else, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to coach and mentor, make sure they have all the resources that they need, and to push as much decision-making to the frontline people so that they feel mm-hmm. empowered to do what they need to do their mm-hmm. jobs. And so the right culture is what drives that, making sure that we have a workplace where everybody feels accepted. You know, one of the great learning lessons that I had as we went through things here in the United States with Black Lives Matter and our political election, you know, and that kind of environment was that we wanted to create a place where it was safe to be different. And we were already a very diverse business. You can imagine with 50 languages and video being call center based, all these people from different, you know, languages and cultures and faiths and beliefs being together. Like we couldn't, we as a company don't have a holiday dinner. We have a celebration of success luncheon. And I have to tell you, it's the best potluck you will ever find because everyone from their different languages and cultures is bringing in traditional dishes, right?
Oh, that sounds amazing.
If we could only start a restaurant, it would be pretty incredible. But I think that's a big part of it. Setting up the right culture is what everything else comes from.
Yeah, I completely agree. Culture is everything. For young entrepreneurs starting out in this industry, starting their own business, what kind of advice would you give to them?
Look, this is a rapidly evolving industry right now with a lot of opportunity. And I've seen companies started just a few years ago have already grown into significant businesses. Mm-hmm. I think what you really want to do is make sure that you are not a me too or just doing what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. I think that's a dangerous recipe. You know, it's like find out what you can do that differentiates you and focus on that, because despite language interpretation being around for, you know, since the beginning of time, right? So you think about the industry itself, you really want to focus on the value of what you're delivering and how you can do something different than other people. Because if cost is your only differentiator, back to that cost theme, mm-hmm. that's a fast way to build a business that turns into a commodity very quickly. And it's one that you won't be able to, you know, build or sell or do anything like that, because its only competition is cost. So you really want to build something more into it that makes it matter to you.
And now we're done, Jamie. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you guys. Thank you so much.
This was so much fun talking to you.
It was a lot of fun. You guys, this is going to be a great podcast series. I'm looking forward to hearing them all.
Thank you so much, Jamie. And thank you for joining us in the hot seat. I hope you didn't sweat too much. If anyone else feels like letting off some steam as well, and you are part of the C-suite at the company in the language services industry, sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
And for the viewers, this was all, folks. Thank you so much for watching, and look out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website. Thanks, everyone.